Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by BackSportsPage.com. This is Mo, and I'm coming to you live with my co-host T, and of course, Tom. Thanks for tuning in at our new start time of 7 o'clock, and just to confirm, we will be starting at 7 p.m. every week from now on. So, congratulations to all. You officially made it through another NFL offseason, and it's kind of hard to believe that the NFL season actually kicks off in a little over an hour from now. Awesome. Everyone, make sure to have your fantasy lineup set and ready to go for tonight's game. If you do need help in doing so, we have a big show ahead as we'll be going over all your week one matchup plays for all 16 games this upcoming weekend. Then, at about 7:45, fantasy guru Kevin Biggers will be coming on to help us with something that we haven't covered yet, which is defenses and special teams. He'll discuss the technique of streaming defenses and the best week one matchups based on their opponents. And then, after our interview with Kevin, we'll be giving away a brand new copy of Matthew Berry's New York Times best-selling book, The Fantasy Life. It came out a few months ago. Me and T both have already read it. It's fantastic. You're going to love it, whether you're a fantasy football fan or not. It has a bunch of really cool stories about crazy things that people have done in fantasy leagues in the past. You know, anywhere from getting tattoos to drafting while their wives are in labor, crazy stuff like that. And it's a very interesting read. All you have to do is answer a simple trivia question when we give you the cue to call in, which will be near the end of the show. All right, finally, possibly our most beneficial giveaway of the show, our very own producer, Comps, will be going over his bets for the weekend, so make sure you stick with us till the end, if for nothing else, just to bet the opposite of what he says. So while you're listening, feel free to call in. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 760-283-0846. Again, that's 760-283-0846, or you can inbox us your questions on Facebook. All right, so a few storylines to get us going. First, we have Andre Brown injury, which happened shortly after we finished up our episode last week. You know, David Wilson was always a starter in New York, so all this kind of does is just clear up his draft value, which is anywhere in the third to fourth round. I think he's going a little bit higher now. He was ranked anywhere from 15 to 20. Now he's more towards the late 12 to 15 range.
Yeah, I would definitely start thinking about taking David Wilson in the middle of the second round now, if you still have a draft after tonight. The biggest thing is there was maybe some talk that maybe Andre Brown could steal goal line carries away from David Wilson because Andre Brown, when he has played, has been a proven goal line back. But now David Wilson will get all the work for the Giants behind a pretty underrated offensive line. So I kind of like David Wilson, and I think he has a chance to crack into that top 10 running back range this year, because I think you're looking at, you know, at least 1,200 yards and possibly double-digit touchdowns. So, you know, Andre Brown has proven to be injury-prone in the past. You know, that's why he got cut. I think the Giants are like a nice team or something like that. It's the same leg he broke last year, so there's no guaranteeing that he's going to come back and be 100% healthy. So I would move David Wilson up draft boards a little bit.
Yeah, the opportunity is absolutely there for David Wilson. We know the upside is there, and that's why he's being taken as early as he has been, especially with no proven history of success. But I think the fantasy advice we need to focus on here is whether what you do with Andre Brown now. It looks like he's going to be out. You know, it was initially reported as a much bigger injury than it turned out to be. He may only be out for a few weeks. I don't think he's draftable in standard leagues. All it does is move David Wilson up slightly. So move on to another running back situation in New York, which may be relevant. Bilal Powell, the start for the Jets. And we also have Geno Smith to start for the Jets. Both of these guys came into camp as it looked like they were going to be the clear backups. Powell just outplaying Chris Ivory. I don't know if that says less for Chris Ivory or more for Bilal Powell, but they're waiting for Mike Goodson to come back as well. So it's not like either one of these guys are going to run away with it. Bilal Powell becomes the guy you want to own in the Jets' backfield. Geno Smith, you're really not drafting unless you're in a deep two-quarterback league, and even then I would highly consider it.
I would draft guys. He's probably the last starting quarterback I would draft.
I was in a deep two-quarterback league last night, and Geno Smith was the last guy to go. Last starting quarterback to go. So, I mean, it's Powell, you need to own him. I wouldn't count on starting him in week one or at all if you could try to avoid it. I think Goodson might be the guy who finishes as the highest points per game running back on this Jets roster, but he's also not draftable. So
yeah, the Jets backfield is kind of turning into like a less talented Steelers backfield almost.
Or Denver, same.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the only reason I said less talented than Pittsburgh is I think Le'Veon Bell eventually comes back and probably wins that job and becomes the running back to go to in that backfield. But if I can at all, unless I'm absolutely desperate, I'm not really counting on any. First of all, I'm not owning any Jets running back, and I'm certainly not counting on them for any fantasy production this year. Kaz, do you have something to say at the resident?
Yeah, no, just a quick footnote to add on to Mo's opinion of Mike Woodson. Goodson.
Basketball.
Get the goatee out of here. Mike Goodson did average 6 yards a carry last year. It's only a statistic, but, you know, for what it's worth, it's pretty impressive.
I think it's worth noting that Const owns a Chris Ivory jersey. So I just wanted everyone to know that. Take his advice as you will.
Const is still such a blind, faithful Jets fan that he actually buys jerseys of players that before they play for the Jets, when he just knows they're eventually going to turn out terrible.
Hey, give me a break, right? Let's move on.
To be fair, there were a lot of people that liked the Chris Ivory trade. Personally, I didn't understand it. Whatever, it's relevant. Let's move on to something that could possibly be more relevant in the fantasy world. Percy Harvin tweeted out in the past couple of days that he for Seahawks fans to be ready for him to be back in week 7. I don't know if he's just being optimistic. He's just trying to get the so-called 12th man even more amped up, the fans in Seattle. Maybe this makes him a little more draftable in leagues. If you have more of a shallow roster, you're not drafting him. You're keeping Harvin on the free agency list. Keeper leagues is the only way he should be drafted. I just don't think – I think it's just more of just you know, getting a motivational tactic or just an optimism thing on Percy Harvin's behalf. He's just supposed to be out to week 14. Now, all of a sudden, he's self-diagnosing himself as coming back in week 7, 8. We'll see about that. It's worth mentioning, but I wouldn't draft him.
Yeah, I think this is a tricky situation because you have a guy that's injury-prone who got hurt again. You know, has a hip injury, which could be tricky, You know, it's just, you don't want to take the player's word for it. But I will say about this, especially in keeper leagues, if he's out there, I would definitely pick him up. I mean, the Seahawks bye week is week 12, so even if he comes back in week 7, you're still going to have to send him for a bye week. But if you're one of those guys that believes he's going to come back in week 7 or 8 or whatever, and you can get to a bye week, you know, if the wide receivers on your team don't have, like, for instance, my team, I have Calvin Johnson and Brandon Marshall. Their bye weeks are 8 and 9. I don't think Percy Harvin's available in my league, but if he was, I would think about it because I don't need a third wide receiver until week 8. So, you know, if you're in one of those situations where you don't have one of your top 2 or 3 wide receivers on a bye week until then, I definitely think Percy Harvin is either draftable or you haven't done your draft yet, or definitely, you know, he would be one of my top targets on the waiver wire this week.
Quick question. Who do you think scores more fantasy points this season, Andre Brown or Percy Harvin?
Percy Harvin.
And what if if he comes back in week 14, then it's not even close.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are confident he's going to come back before that?
I don't know how Andre Brown has broken the seam like twice in 10 minutes.
It's completely hypothetical. I was just curious as to what you guys think.
As a Giants fan, I'm hoping that David Wilson, no pun intended, runs away with the job while Andre Brown's on the designated to return IR list. So, you know, Yeah, I think that Percy Harvin is going to come back. He might need a week or two, but he's going to be the go-to guy in a very good offense.
Yeah, even with that, I still see Andre Brown taking some work away from David Wilson when and if he does come back fairly healthy. But like as you said before, he has an injury history, so it could always happen again. Isaac Redman named a starter in Pittsburgh. This just kind of clears up a situation that has been ongoing for a few weeks now.
Sure.
Felix Jones was reportedly named a starter for about one day, which I think doubles his total in his career of days being named starter. A week before the regular season.
Well, that's what happens when you draft a college backup in the first round.
Well, he was a backup, if I'm mistaken. He was a backup to Adrian Peterson, wasn't he?
No, nice knowledge of college football. He was Darren McFadden.
Darren McFadden, that's right.
Yeah, actually, he's actually the third best running back in that college backfield. Peyton Hills is in that college backfield, too.
All right, that could be argued. I mean, either way, obviously Darren McFadden was a much more talented guy coming in college than coming into the NFL. But Redman, after cutting Jonathan Dwyer, they do also have LaRod Steven Talon. It's just going to be, I think it's going to be a committee. I wouldn't want to start either of these guys, especially in week one. Going forward, here's a few guys that you don't have to worry about starting week one. Do it with confidence. Brandon Marshall, Roddy White, and Victor Cruz, three stud wide receivers. Looks like they'll all be ready to go in week one. Like I said, get them in your lineups. Don't worry about their injuries. They were all nicked up in the preseason. Nothing to worry about. So on to the topic of the show. We're going to go over a little bit of every game that's going to be played this weekend, starting with the game that's kicking off in about an hour, a little bit more than an hour, Denver versus Baltimore. Just a few things we want to go over. Denver's offense, how do you guys think Wes Welker is going to integrate into Denver's passing attack? Is his catch going to be taken away from Thomas and Eric Decker, Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker? Same situation with the running backs as well. There's just a big committee when it comes to this entire offense. And then you throw in Julius Thomas, the new tight end from Denver, who actually had a pretty big preseason. We try not to look too much into the preseason statistics, but with Peyton Manning and Peyton Manning can make any tight end pretty relevant when it comes to fantasy. So there's a lot of targets to go around. Who's the guy you want to own here? Demaryius Thomas is the consensus highest pick. Are you worried that no one else is going to pan out in this offense? There's not enough ball to go around?
Well, tonight I actually expect Denver to throw the ball a lot, often and a lot, because I don't think they can run the ball on Baltimore. So, unfortunately, I'm not sure if we're going to get a really good answer to the running back situation in Denver tonight. I just think that Baltimore is going to control both lines, actually. I think Denver is kind of banged up along the offensive line. And, you know, they have Haloti Ngata in there and other guys. I think they're going to be able to disrupt the run. So I expect Peyton to throw the ball off. And I actually think that all three wide receivers have a pretty good chance of, you know, producing at a starter's level tonight.
What about Thomas then, too?
I haven't seen enough of him. I saw Denver play a half of a preseason game against Seattle. I mean, he's the fourth, at best, he's the fourth passing option in that offense. So, you know, I'm not.
The only thing that I think Thomas is going to take goal line or red zone opportunities away from Eric Decker.
I was just about to say that Peyton has looked towards his tight end in the red zone, you know, in previous seasons.
He's a huge target. He's a, you know, former power forward in college. He's very extremely athletic.
I mean, and the thing about Peyton Manning is, you know, he's the, shall we say, the Picasso of exploiting mismatches. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say who's going to have, you know, the biggest day. So, like Ann said, you know, Demaryius Thomas, you would think, is the primary target in the red zone. You know, when it comes to the intermediate routes, I mean, Welker, let's be fair, he's much, much better than Eric Decker. I think he'll catch the most balls tonight, but I wouldn't be surprised if Demaryius Thomas catches two touchdowns.
And, you know, when we look over to Baltimore's side, it looks like both of the red zone targets have been taken away. That is Pitta, obviously, is probably going to miss the whole year due to an injury. Anquan Boldin traded to San Francisco. They combined for 205 targets last year. So the big question is, where are these targets going to go? They still have Torrey Smith, deep threat Kobe Jones, neither of which are, you know, too reliable of options. You know, do they give more? There's been talk that Ray Rice is going to line up as a wide receiver. Do they give more targets to him? Or is Bernard Pierce going to take anything away from Ray Rice? How's this going to work?
Yeah, they had that undrafted rookie, Marlon Brown, who played really well in the preseason too. So I would expect some targets to go his way. Ed Dixon as well. I mean, you know, I think Dennis Pitta had like 93 targets last year, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, look for Dixon, even though he's not as talented as Pitta, to, you know, maybe get into the 80 to 90 range as far as targets go. I think you'll see Torrey Smith run more intermediate routes. He's not going to be just a deep threat that he's been in the past. I mean, he only caught 49 balls last year for, you know, a really good wide receiver. That's an alarmingly low amount. But what I'm really interested tonight is to see, you know, all the preseason talk that Bernard Pierce was going to take carries away from Ray Rice. I'm really interested to see, does he, you know, is it more of a when Rice needs a break, or, you know, are they going to rotate and is Pierce going to play once, you know, one out of every three series? Are they going to take Pierce out in the red zone and give Rice all the red zone touches? You know, that's the thing I'm most interested to see tonight, to see if Rice's value is going to be taken away from Pierce by it all.
All right, so we have a ton of fantasy guys going in this game tonight, especially wide receivers. In this game, New England versus Buffalo later on in the weekend. New England, a lot of question marks just because they lost without Gronk. They don't have their top five targets from last season. Undrafted rookie from Nevada, Zach Sudfeld, is going to take over at tight end. Which number two receiver is going to step up out of Kendall Tompkins, Aaron Dobson? You know, but there's a lot of things to learn if we're able to watch this first game. Danny Amendola, he did make it through preseason. He was able to stay healthy for that extended period of time at least, so that's promising. How's Brady going to do with these guys? We're not sure. Are they going to lean more on the running game? Is Shane Vereen going to line up as a wide receiver? Plenty of questions to ask yourself. There's E.J. Manuel starting for Buffalo. This is good news for every skill player in the Buffalo offense, especially Stevie Johnson. You know, there was talk that if he wasn't able to play, they were going to have to start undrafted rookie Jeff Toole, which is just kind of, you know, by default, their only option left. C.J. Spiller also benefits from this. E.J. Manuel, even though he did look promising in preseason games, he was dumping the ball offshore a lot. I think that bodes well for C.J. Spiller, and especially teams who drafted him in PPR leagues. And, you know, we'll see if Sutton Roan actually stays with what he said, and they're going to give C.J. Spiller the ball as much as he wants to. He's pretty much, you know, he's the most dangerous player they have. I think we all know that.
He might be the only dangerous player they have, but...
Right. Well, that's more to the point. So, you know, Stevie Johnson, I still feel like he's going to put up the same numbers that he always has in recent years. It's just going to be a little bit harder to do with E.J. Manuel, you know, rookie quarterback at the helm. So, Seattle versus Carolina, the only thing I'm worried about here, Carolina, Cam Newton is the big fantasy guy in this offense. But Seattle was the number one rated defense in the NFL last year. So what does this do for Cam Newton? If you're in one quarterback league, chances are you don't, especially if you call it for strategy, chances are you don't have a backup quarterback that you want to start over Cam Newton. You know, Russell Wilson was a top two quarterback when Seattle switched to the read option. So this is after week 12. So, you know, anyone who drafted Russell Wilson is confident. He's hopefully confident that he'll be able to have the same continued success.
Yeah, they actually played last year, and it was a 16-12 game. And neither of the quarterbacks had a really good game. But the bottom line is, if you draft a candidate, you're going to be starting him. You don't really play matchups with your studs. You know, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers playing San Fran this week. You're still going to start him.
There's very few, especially in one quarterback league, there's very few times where you're going to have to bench. Quarterback is the only position where you can consider playing one of your backups over, if not, or especially one of your studs, playing a backup over one of your stud position players. So we'll see. I mean, Carolina, like I said, they're playing against Seattle, the number one rated defense. There's not many options here. If you do Steve Smith, he could be anywhere from your third or fourth wide receiver. D'Angelo Williams looks like the guy to own here, even though they did hint that they're trying to get Mike Tolbert some more work at running back. The big thing is who's going to get the goal line carries here, and is there going to be a wide receiver two that steps up, or a second wide receiver that steps up in this offense? So next game we have Cincinnati versus Chicago. Another more bad news for a fantasy offense. Chicago happened to finish as the number three rated defense in the NFL last year and the highest scoring fantasy defense in the league last year. So Cincinnati, you know, we already have questions about their offense based on Ben Jarvis Greenells and Giovanni Bernard splitting carries. And they also, their tight end situation is kind of in the same boat with Tyler Eifert and Jermaine Gresham. So we don't know who's going to emerge out of these two wide receivers. A.J. Green is the clear-cut guy you want to have here. Andy Dalton's not really starting unless you're in two quarterback leagues.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I don't think Cincinnati's going to be able to run the ball that well against Chicago, so you might get, you know, some answers as far as the second quarterback or the tight end goes. You know, I want to see who is the most targeted tight end out of Gresham and Eifert. You know, Eifert was a little, you know, he didn't see too many targets in the preseason. So, you know, I want to see how much they use these two guys because, like I said, I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball too well. I want to see how much Bernard gets used in the passing game because Greenhouse is a pass catcher. Can he become a target out of the backfield? So, you know, I'm interested to see that. As far as Chicago goes, there's really not too much to look at here. The only thing that really interests me is Matt Forte. How does he look in Trestman's offense? You know, he got goal line carries and he was very successful with them in the preseason. And you know, I want to see how much they target him in the passing game. Trestman likes to use his running backs as pass catchers, and Forte is basically one of the best in the league catching the ball out of the backfield. So I want to see if Forte in this offense that is actually suited for him can become one of the elite top, you know, six, seven guys in fantasy football.
It's definitely possible. Another question, we're all pretty confident with Brandon Marshall. Chicago does have Alshon Jeffrey, the highly talented wide receiver. Let's see if he takes the next step in this passing offense. Also, Jay Cutler, you know, there's a possibility that he breaks into the top 10 this year. The bottom end of the top 10 is pretty much his ceiling, but he definitely does have the talent to do so.
I know you're high on Jay Cutler. I don't think he can get that high, though.
No, it's not very unlikely. I don't think he's going to do it either, but there's definitely the possibility, and talent-wise, you can't argue with his ability. It's just a matter of, you know, they've improved their offensive line slightly. If they do have a better offense or passing system than they did last year, there's definitely a chance that Jay Cutler can take the next step. So, I mean, he's done it before. That's the biggest thing he has going for him.
Yeah, but it's going on, I think it's 5 years now, so. Whatever.
It's just happened. Yeah, we'll see.
It's not even worth arguing because.
Miami versus Cleveland, one of the more boring matchups of the weekend. But you know what? At least these teams are fairly even, at least. So, Miami, you know, more talk today even that Daniel Thomas and Lamar Miller are going to split carries. You know, despite Lamar Miller clearly outplaying him in the preseason and Daniel Thomas just having, speaking of, you know, past careers, Daniel Thomas has done nothing. I think he averaged under 3 yards per carry in his preseason. You know, we've talked about it before. I don't like to put too much stock into preseason value, but we'll see.
I think they're going to have Daniel Thomas play because of pass protection. I mean, Lamar Miller's not that great at pass protection, but I can't imagine. They might get closer to playing time, but I can't imagine they're going to get close in catch.
Yeah, I mean, Lamar Miller's looked a little bit better. We'll see. They do also have Mike Wallace.
Is it just me, or is this one of the least interesting fantasy football matches?
I disagree. I think it's a not as interesting football matchup. I think it's going to be a boring game. But I think both of these teams have a lot of questions and can have a bunch of relevant players. You know, can Whedon take the next step? Is Richardson finally healthy? You know, what is Jordan Cameron going to look like? Lamar Miller, Daniel Thomas situation, Mike Wallace in Miami. I think it has a lot of fantasy questions that fantasy owners will like to see. But anyway, moving on to, as you say about Mike Wallace, it's his first game without Big Ben, so we'll see how he looks. And then, like I said, Cleveland, you know, moving to Cleveland, can, again, I feel like I've been saying this, but can Richardson make that jump to the elite in as far as, you know, top five, six guys? And how is he going to look in North Turner's offense? Is he going to catch the ball more? You know, he had a decent amount of catches last year. I think he had 51. You know, can he get to that 60, 70 catch mark? And, you know, Cleveland will be a little bit more interesting when Josh Gordon comes back after the second game. But, you know, as far as pass catchers go, Jordan Cam is a guy that people want to keep an eye on this week because, you know, we're not exactly sure what to expect out of him, but he's one of those, you know, basketball-playing tight ends that's really athletic and could prove to be Cleveland's top red zone threat.
Which is kind of becoming a norm when it comes to basketball-playing tight ends. I think that's what, you know, a lot of teams are looking for at this point. You know, like you said, there's a lot of questions. Josh Gordon is not going to be playing this week, so he's one of the lower sleeper-end guys on Cleveland. You know, even Brandon Weeden might make his way into a nice quarterback, too. We'll see. Right now he's being drafted as a backup. Let's move on to the next game, Minnesota versus Detroit. Detroit, a very pass-happy offense. What is the ceiling for Reggie Bush this year, especially when it comes to reception? And honestly, like I said, I've mentioned it before, if he does stay healthy, big if he stays healthy all year, especially with, you know, they have two new starters on the offensive line, he's going to be the main running back. But more importantly, I think he becomes their number two wide receiver. So in PPR leagues, Reggie Bush becomes kind of a stud. They do have their number two receiver. We don't know who's going to step up, undrafted rookie Patrick Edwards out of Houston. Ryan Boyle is coming back from his third ACL injury now?
Second?
He should be ready by week one. I think they're just going to work him in slowly. Nate Burleson.
Yeah,
kind
I wouldn't
of
expect much from Broyles early.
Minnesota, you know, another team with wide receiver questions. We all know Adrian Peterson is the guy you want to own here. With wide receivers, Greg Jennings is obviously talented. Cordarrelle Patterson, first-round pick. He's talented as well, even though we're skeptical about first rookie wide receivers. So I think it's more Christian Ponder is the reason that these guys are going so late.
Yeah, and the one question I'm going to look for is, you know, is Bush, we know Detroit targeted running backs a lot last year, but is Bush going to be so efficient and so good in the passing game? Is he going to make those, you know, a shorter, an intermediate route runner like a Ryan Broyles or a Brandon Pettigrew? Is he going to make them a little bit, you know, obsolete in his offense? Is he going to take away a lot of those shorter intermediate targets? And, you know, Brandon Pettigrew last year was not great, but he's a fantasy playable tight end. Is he going to still be that fantasy playable tight end with Drake Bell, Reggie Bush catching passes out of the backfield?
Right. I mean, for a team that we just said that they have a lot of question marks at wide receiver or just in the passing game in general, there's a lot of targets to go around. And that might be part of the problem. You just don't know which guy you're going to want to start on any given week, except for Calvin Johnson, of course, who's the consensus number one wide receiver. Let's move on. We have Oakland versus Indianapolis this weekend. Indianapolis, the favorite of a lot of teams or a lot of players in survivor pools. So big thing for Oakland, Darren McFadden. You know, there was a lot of talk, especially the past few seasons, of just him being a top five, if not more, talent in the league. But now, I still think he's up there. I still think he's extremely talented. The only thing, and the reason he's falling, and deservedly so, is that Oakland's offense, you know, especially their offensive line, it's just terrible. It's not good. I mean, there's nothing else to say about that. Terrell Pryor takes over as a starting quarterback. He's not much of a throwing quarterback, which I think it actually helps McFadden that Pryor took over instead of Matt Flynn, because we've seen this before. You know, Willis McGahee, his yards per carry went up when Tebow took over. You know, same with it helped. Alfred Morris benefited from having a running quarterback in RG3. I think it helps McFadden a little bit, and based off how talented I think he really is, I think this is a guy, you know, he's being drafted in fifth, sixth, seventh rounds. It's not a bad option. They really don't have many other.
I think the question is Oakland going to run the read option, you know, because that's really what helps the running backs is good decisions by the running quarterback. So it remains to be seen, one, if they're going to run the read option, or two, Terrell Pryor is actually capable of making good decisions.
Right. I mean, they're going away from that zone blocking scheme that didn't work the past couple of years when McFadden was the starting running back. So we'll see. Pryor is not really fantasy relevant, and that's unless you're in deep two quarterback leagues, which I was last night, and I got stuck with this loser as my back quarterback. But you know, he's a decent flyer to have.
Yeah, no. The thing about the Colts is that they're historically, you know, especially the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, they, you know, just not a good run defense at all. They, you know, they get gashed on a regular basis. So don't be surprised if Darren McFadden goes for a good 100 to 120. And you know they're going to run the ball early and often because A, Terrell Pryor is their quarterback, and B, to keep Andrew Luck off the field.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
wouldn't surprise me at all.
When it comes to Oakland, I think the bigger thing, I mean, we all love Andrew Luck, especially in fantasy leagues. Like we mentioned before, they're switching to a West Coast offense. They upgraded at wide receiver. T.Y. Hilton is a year older. He's the guy, he's been a common sleeper among the three of us since the start of the preseason. So let's see what T.Y. Hilton can do this week. Let's see, more importantly, the usage that he gets.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is how many, you know, are they going to run a lot of three wide receiver sets, or are they going to run a lot of two tight end sets? They said they want to run the ball. They said they want to run out of the two tight end set. That remains to be seen. Kobe Fleener's not a great blocking tight end, so we'll see. But, I mean, I really personally hope that they run a lot of three wide receiver sets because I love T.Y. Hilton this year, and I think he could do a lot of damage out of the slot.
So that's a big thing to watch for, especially people who took him late in draft. Another game you don't want to be watching, Kansas City versus Jacksonville. Kansas City, Andy Reid's a new coach for the Chiefs. Let's see. They have Alex Smith, the guy I really like there, Dwayne Bowe, Jamaal Charles, he's a first-round pick in PPR leagues. You know, it's I kind of like what he's capable of. He's going to take over the new Brian Westbrook role, which Andy Reid had as a running back in Philly. I think Dwayne Bowe, like I said, he's the guy you want to watch out for. He's very talented. He just never took the next step to be a wide receiver one. So we'll see about that. Maurice Jones-Drew for Jacksonville in a contract year. They did say today that they're going to get the ball as often as he wants and as often as they need. He's kind of like what we spoke about before with C.J. Spiller in Buffalo. He's pretty much the only option they have on offense.
Yeah, I think Dwayne Bowe could have a huge week this week against Jacksonville. I think Kansas City's going to throw the ball all around. That's what Andy Reid does. And right now I don't think they have really another option as far as wide receivers go. I think Jamaal Charles is an option out of the backfield. But, I think they're going to be able to move the ball against Jacksonville's defense. Jacksonville's not really good on offense or defense. So, and one thing I'll be in particular interested in is how Cecil Shorts looks with Blaine Gabbert. All the damage he did last year was with Chad Henne as quarterback, so we'll see what he looks like with Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, I think this offense is going to be a little more successful when Chad Henne, it's more of a when than if. When Chad Henne takes over as the starting quarterback there, that team. This might be the most fantasy, the highest fantasy scoring game of the weekend, the Falcons versus the Saints. So Atlanta, we all know, you know, the stud wide receivers they have there, along with Steven Jackson as the running back taking over from Michael Turner. You know, is Steven Jackson going to get the same amount and as often going to get the goal line carries that Michael Turner did, and what can we make of the wide receiver core there? Personally, you know, it looks like Julio Jones has been rated as the fifth wide receiver in most leagues. When it comes to PPR, these guys can be drafted back to back without hesitation. I think Roddy White's the guy you want to own. He's more consistent. What's the number? 8? I think there's 8 consecutive years now where Roddy White hasn't even missed a game. It's extremely impressive. Matt Ryan, he's kind of that middle of the pack of the quarterbacks. He's not the type of guy I want to own. I think you're better off waiting for someone like Tony Romo, Andrew Luck, you know, just based on value alone, but you can get him later on in drafts.
I will say this, too. I completely agree with you about Roddy White being the more consistent one, but don't be surprised for this week with Roddy White coming off an injury if Julio Jones is the wide receiver to go off. They very, very rarely have dominant games together, which is kind of weird because, you know, you see other teams with two really good wide receivers, the Giants with Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks, you know, the Broncos last year with Decker and Demaryius Thomas. You see teams with two wide receivers that can have good games together, but it's very weird. Roddy White and Julio Jones very rarely do. So, you know, with Roddy White coming off the injury, I would expect Julio Jones to be the more targeted one this week, but I think over the course of the season, White will be the more consistent one. And like you said, with New Orleans, there's really not too much to talk about here. Just the return of Sean Payton, you know, there's talk about them returning to, you know, the run game, not even returning, they never were really there, but trying to focus more on the run game, get the run game going, but, you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
You know,
especially not this week.
But we were talking about, or you were just mentioning, you know, if there's enough targets to go around, something kind of like in Atlanta, there's the two stud wide receivers, but I'm kind of curious when it comes to New Orleans as to who is going to get the most attention. There's still a lot of, you know, Marcus Colson, he's a little banged up, but he's been banged up his entire career, so we're not really concerned about that. But now you have a completely healthy Jimmy Graham and a normal Darren Sproles. So between the three of them, if this offense comes back to normal, you know, Drew Brees is going to put up the numbers. I love Drew Brees this year, especially with Sean Payton coming back.
Yeah,
I'm just curious as to see if all three of those guys, and then you mix in Lance Moore, who's kind of like a late-round PPR sleeper, if he can hold up his value in that round.
No. I mean, the Saints over the past 3 years have thrown the ball on an average like 41 to 42 times. So the targets are going to be there. Let's say even if you take 12 targets away to Lance Moore, Kenny Stills, you know,
or even Robert Meacham now.
Yeah, Pierre Thomas, whoever. Let's just say 12 of the targets go to the guys like that. That's still 10 targets apiece for Sproles, Colson, and Jimmy Graham. And as much as this pains me to say it, Jimmy Graham has historically dominated the Falcons. I believe he's, over the last 2 years in four games against the Falcons, he's averaged, I think, 5 or 6 catches with 80 yards a game and a touchdown. He's got 4 touchdowns in his last 4 games. So
don't hurt yourself too much over this. Jimmy Graham plays well against every team he plays against. It's just a matter of, you know, he happened
right
to play them twice over the past 2 seasons when he's healthy. You know, let's move on to the next game, Tampa Bay versus the Jets. The comeback for Darrell Revis, returning to New York, returning to the Meadowlands.
What exactly is there to talk about here?
We mentioned Bilal Powell before.
The return of Revis and the unveiling of Geno Smith.
You know what we can talk about? My two favorite guys, actually, back-to-back, Doug Martin and Jimmy Graham this season, who I actually end up with on a bunch of teams. I'm really excited about that. I think Carl Nix, the guard, who also missed most of the season last year for Tampa Bay, he may miss this game as well. Don't knock Doug Martin down your list. Start him. Like we said, if you drafted him that early, you're going to be riding him all season. Tennessee versus Pittsburgh, next game we have. Tennessee improved offensive line. You know, I feel like we talk about this every preseason. Chris Johnson, he did look good on 2 carries in the preseason, so that's going to hype up his stock like it does every year.
Hey, 2 carries for 60 yards, baby.
Yeah, pretty decent. He's house, let's face it. But then there's also the worry of Sean Green taking goal line carries away from him. He's never been much of a touchdown threat, except when he comes through in the house.
Yeah. But, I mean, I will say this. If Chris Johnson has a rough week one, don't get too discouraged about it. Pittsburgh had the number one rush defense in the league last year, so, you know, don't just think it's going to be the same old. I would give him another chance if he doesn't have a rough week one.
He's a very frustrating running back to have, but still, I mean, you took him that early. He's anywhere from second to fourth round. I've seen him go this year. His upside is too much to pass up on. We talked about Pittsburgh, the running back by committee. I like Antonio Brown to step up, especially in PPR leagues, as far as it comes to wide receivers. Big Ben, yeah, he was a top 10 quarterback in points per game last season before he got hurt. So follow up on that. Pittsburgh actually my survivor pick for the week. So hopefully they can come through at home versus a lowly Tennessee led by Jake Locker team.
I love Big Ben and all Pittsburgh wide receivers this week. I think they're going to be able to throw the ball all over Tennessee. You know, let's not forget Big Ben was on, before he got hurt last year, was on pace for the best season of his career, fantasy-wise, last year.
So all that matters on this show.
Yeah, basically. And, you know, the one thing, you know, I think we kind of know what Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders can be. At least I think we know their ceiling. The one guy I'm really going to watch out for is Marcus Wheaton. You know, is he going to be the new speed guy? Is he going to be the new Mike Wallace on this team? You know, I want to see if he gets, you know, how many targets he gets over the top of Tennessee's defense. So moving to the next game, which is actually a really interesting game fantasy-wise.
And real life. I think this is the best game in real life, actually. Green Bay versus San Francisco. San Francisco last year finished as the number two real-life defense, I believe number three in fantasy. So, you know, the running back situation in Green Bay is a little shaky, as is. What are we going to do with it? Eddie Lacy is the only guy you want to start at best in a flex position. You're still starting Rodgers. You use the high pick on him. And if you went as far as to wait for DeMichael Finley to fall, I'm assuming he's your starting tight end. We've talked about this over and over. There's no reason to take a backup tight end because then DeMichael Finley would just be sitting on your bench if he is there, which makes no sense to me. Anyway, can Colin Kaepernick take the next step? That's a big question for San Francisco. There's not much else to own there except, you know, Frank Gore. Is this possibly the year that he recedes and just becomes, you know, the old man that we all thought he was going to be for the past three seasons? So yeah. I think this is, like that, the most anticipated game for, not for fantasy purposes, but for real life.
Yeah, and the one thing I will say, just like I said about Chris Johnson, if Eddie Lacy has a tough week against San Fran's D, don't fall too down on him. You know, trust me, a lot of running backs this year are going to have tough weeks against San Fran's D.
Right, which doesn't bode well for, you know, for running backs in that division, which, you know, Marshawn Lynch, Darrell Richardson, they're going to be facing these tough defenses twice a year.
Yeah, I would like to see how many carries Eddie Lacy gets and how many, you know, goal-to-go or red zone carries he gets. See if they run the ball in the red zone or if they try to pass. You know, I think Rodgers could actually be, you know, if you were to look at San Fran's D and they think that, you know, oh, San Francisco, Rodgers is going to be not a bad play. Aaron Rodgers is never a bad play, but I've seen people ranking him like seventh among quarterbacks this week. I think San Francisco's secondary is really, really overrated. So, I mean, we'll see. They're starting a rookie at safety. They have Nnamdi Asamoah as their third cornerback now, I know, but still, like, I don't know.
Sounds decent.
What?
That sounds decent to have Asamoah as their quarterback.
Ask Eagles fans what Asamoah looked like last year.
Right, that just shows how much he's fallen, not so much the San Francisco defense. But
yeah, I mean, I'm just I don't know. I think, you know, Rodgers is going to throw the ball all around them. And one last thing that I want to bring up is, you know, see if a wide receiver besides Bolden steps up.
I don't think they have another. I mean, Quentin Patton, maybe. That's the only other option they possibly have. You know, here's another matchup. St. Louis playing against Arizona. They have a bunch of wide receivers who we don't know who's going to step up out of this group. Chris Givens is the guy you want to own. Watch this game closely. I like the upside of a bunch of these wide receivers. Tavon Austin, Chris Givens, even the tight end, Jared Cook. So, you know, their production relies heavily on Sam Bradford, the quarterback, as well. Same clearly with Larry Fitzgerald, who finished as a top 10 receiver in almost every year he's been in the league, except for last year.
And his rookie year, that's it. Other than that, he's been top 10.
And that's not because of his talent level. It's just because of the quarterback play of recent years and also the offensive line.
And a couple of things I would just look for in this game is the workload of Rashad Mendenhall. He's been limited in practice all week. But, you know, Bruce Arians says that he wants to lean on Mendenhall in the running game and he wants him to be his workhorse. And this is going to sound weird because we don't spend a lot of time on defenses, but I love St. Louis's defense this week. It's against a still terrible Arizona Cardinals offensive line with a mobile quarterback in Carson Palmer. And I think St. Louis led the league in sacks last year. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they did. And they have two playmaking cornerbacks to a turnover immobile prone Carson Palmer. So I love St. Louis's D this year.
Yeah,
this week, I'm sorry.
Definitely, even both these both of these defenses come in as fantasy sleepers.
Absolutely.
Which we'll talk about in a little bit when Kevin comes on. Next game we have Giants versus Cowboys. Giants.
How about them Cowboys?
You know, we mentioned this before. We talked about David Wilson. The only other question here, you know, we have, let's see if Ruben Randall becomes an option as a third wide receiver. If Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz are both healthy, there's a big if they do stay healthy all season. Brandon Meyer is also going to take some targets. He was top five in targets for tight ends last year. So, you know, kind of another one of those situations where we'll see how much there is to go around. The Cowboys, Dez Bryant, I moved him up to my second wide receiver. He surpassed Brandon Marshall. He's just looked unbelievable. I think it's about time he turned the corner on his, you know, in the maturity phase of his life. If he could finally dedicate his entire life to football, there's no holding back what he's capable of. But, you know, let's see if the offensive line is capable of holding back, you know, defensive ends and defensive tackles when it comes to Tony Romo. So let's see. Tony Romo's always been successful against the Giants. Again, same situation before when we talked about Jermichael Finley. If you did draft Tony Romo, I hope he didn't do it as your backup because then you wasted way too high of a pick. So he should be starting no matter what. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting Sunday night game.
Yeah, I mean, I love David Wilson in this game. I think that the Giants are going to be able to push around. Well, I mean, I think the Giants' offensive line is going to be able to push around the Cowboys' defensive line. They went from a 3-4 to a 4-3 this week. So you have DeMarcus Ware, and Anthony Spencer has been ruled out, which means George Selvey, the of South Florida fame, who is a 245-pound defensive end. I just think that the Giants are going to be able to push around this offensive line. And as much as it pains me to say, I think Miles Austin in this slot is just going to have a huge game. Their slot corner, if he's healthy enough to play, is Jerron Hosley. And, you know, first of all, he's not that good. He's a second-year guy. And Austin has, when healthy, typically killed the Giants. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I say those are the two guys I really look forward to have huge games, Miles Austin and David Wilson.
All right, we go on to Chargers versus Texans. The only relevant thing here is what's Phillip Rivers going to do, you know, from the Chargers' perspective. I actually like Ryan Matthews as where he's going and value-wise. Last year he was being drafted. We knew he was going to miss the first few weeks with a collarbone injury, and he was still being drafted anywhere from the second to third round. His talent there, not so much. It's more of like it's kind of like a Darren McFadden situation. We just don't like the position he's in. So if he can stay healthy, same as McFadden. If his offensive line can hold up, same as McFadden. If his quarterback can be somewhat productive, and I have a little more faith in Phillip Rivers than I do, you know, an anemic Terrell Pryor. So we'll see. Is Danny Woodhead going to take catches and touches away from Ryan Matthews? We'll see. There's not much of a wide receiver core there. Malcolm Floyd, pretty much the only option they have now. Vincent Brown, talented but unproven. Matthews is probably the only guy you want to start, especially this week, unless you felt as far as to wait for Antonio Gates when it comes to tight end. So the Monday night game, let's move on to the last game of the weekend. The Redskins, RG3, and we know he's going to be the starter now. The wide receivers, all they have is Pierre Garçon. Fell victim to what one of my fellow fantasy league members said years ago. Fred Davis, I put him behind Antonio Gates, so he's not really a guy you want to start. Alfred Morris, RG3, and Pierre Garçon, pretty good matchups against an Eagles defense who weren't too good last year. So now this is kind of a bigger question. Chip Kelly and his new offense in Philly. So what are we going to make of this? We know they want to run the ball often. LeSean McCoy, an obvious top 10 pick, especially when it comes to running back. But is Bryce Brown going to get enough touches in order, you know, to take away from McCoy's value and also in order to start as his own running back? You know, maybe in a flex spot, something like that. Jeremy Maclin, only draftable in keeper league. He's out for the year. And then we have, I would avoid all their tight ends. So, you know, we've gone over all the weekly matchups. So now it's the big thing. I especially, and I've spoken about this before, I want to go with – I don't draft defenses. I like – I have a lot of sleepers this year, and I have a lot of sleepers, you know, in most years. So the thing that I do, and not necessarily is the best way to do it because I'm always – I'm not always the best when it comes to streaming defenses. It's a tough strategy to have, but that's why we brought on our my friend Kevin Biggers. Kevin, I've actually known for years. A huge stat guy, huge analysis guy, and the amount of work he put in just for this short segment, you guys would be completely impressed. So, Kevin, are you there?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, what's up, Kev?
Kev, I really appreciate you coming on. We just went over all the week one matchups for all the teams that, you know, we'll see which guys you want to start against which defense, and if it even matters that much. You know, what's the strategy? I want you to go over it with us. We'll, you know, we'll cut in. We'll intervene if, you know, if I have any questions. But just go over with me. That, you know, the big strategy, the right strategy seems to be start your stud players, start who you want. But you know what? When it comes to streaming defenses, the strategy I like to use, you know, let's just go over what you've researched and you know fill in the listeners on how to do this over the course of the season.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Well. You know, last night I was taking a look at last season's schedule and, you know, the fantasy results for defenses and special teams. And I took note of every favorable streaming situation for each team. You know, basically a favorable situation being when, you know, they're facing off against the, you know, perceived to be weak offense. And then basically after doing this, you know, took a look at the results and, you know, saw whether or not they actually, you know, produced a good fantasy day against, you know, these weak offenses. You know, I defined a good fantasy day as being, you know, a day they scored, you know, 10 or more points, you know, being their fantasy points, that is. My two general takeaways, I kind of agree with what you said, is a very general one. You know, don't bench a good defense and special teams over a bad defense and special teams.
Kev, if I could intervene real quick, or there's something we're having difficulties again. If you could talk a little bit louder to the phone, that would make it sound a lot better. Just because our website is being shaky again. It's the Raiders' offensive line right now. It's not really working. So if you could just talk a little bit louder.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
So anyway, basically what I said was, you know, I basically took a look at the, you know, favorable streaming situations for, you know, last year's defenses and special teams and, you know, basically saw whether or not they produced good fantasy days, you know, against those, you know, in those favorable streaming situations. And basically the two takeaways were, you know, first off, don't bench your good defense and special teams over a bad defense that's, you know, facing a weak offense. You know, for instance, I took a look at three pretty bad fantasy defenses and special teams, Detroit, Kansas City, and Jacksonville, and they failed to actually take advantage of a single favorable streaming situation. Collectively, I think they went 0 for 25 in favorable you know, streaming situation.
Yeah, I don't appreciate you calling Detroit a bad defense. I do see here you did. They did exactly go 0 for 25. So I understand you. You're saying you don't want to replace a bad defense or a good defense, especially one that you drafted high, with a potentially bad defense who has a good matchup, but then now where do you fall when it comes to taking defenses? Are you better off with, do you think you should reach a little bit higher to take the solid defenses like Seattle this year, San Francisco, Chicago, or do you like, you know, we'll hear a little bit more about it in a little bit, but do you go more with the streaming strategy?
I personally go more with the streaming strategy. I think it's fairly difficult to, just because there are so many moving pieces, it's fairly difficult to predict, you know, from year to year who's going to be, you know, the top five fantasy defenses. So this is more applicable to, you know, once the season begins and, you know, we're a few weeks in and we kind of have a good grip on, you know, which defenses are performing, you know, pretty well and which defenses are, you know, not performing well. you know, for this season, you know, obviously, you know, looking at ADP, New England, Seattle, Houston, Cincinnati, San Francisco, and Chicago are all at the top. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have necessarily anything insightful to say about that because, you know, generally you see, you know, pretty big year-to-year fluctuations.
Right, and the big thing, and this is why I lean towards streaming, it's very easy to say you can take one of the top defenses, and as we said, you know, Seattle finishes at number three, but we in the beginning of the year, Seattle wasn't supposed to be a good team, so it's easy to say now, you know, thinking in 2020 hindsight that Seattle was going to finish as high, and it's so easy just to start a top fantasy defense, but no one knew to take Seattle last year. So that's kind of why I go by the streaming method. And another variable when it comes to doing this, when it comes to streaming defense, is if you do take a team like Arizona last year, started off as the top scoring defense in the first 4 weeks. Now, so a lot of people just held on to that defense, as opposed, you know, if you come across a defense who's not only working for you, but is, you know, is finishing among the top five consistently every week, then that's a defense you can hold on to. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree. I mean, that's one of the pitfalls, you know, and it's, you know, not a perfect science, I suppose. But, you know, once you, you know, going back to Seattle, once you realize that Seattle was a legitimate, you know, defense, I think, you know, I think, you know, that's kind of what I meant by, you know, not benching your good defense in that respect. And, you know, but then there are cases like the Cardinals where, you know, they kind of tapered off at the end of the season or, you know, after their strong start.
Right, exactly. So, all right, so now you've gone over your strategy. I completely agree with you. I like streaming defenses just for the main fact that you don't have to reach higher. You know, it's the same thing we say about kickers. You know, in order to get the best kicker from last year, you're going to have to reach a few rounds early, but it's just not worth it because it's not consistent. We don't know who's going to finish there. And defense, more than any other position, there's turnover within the top five. So now that being said, coming into week one, who are your best matchups in week one when it comes to, you know, playing against it? And it's tough. It's tough in week one because we don't know what teams are made of, but who are your top three week one matchups when it comes to defenses playing against a bad offense?
Okay. Well, first off, I just actually wanted to mention my other takeaway from, you know, my research from last night. Was that two teams actually stood out in terms of their reliability in streaming. It was the Ravens and the Jets, though neither of them finished in the top 10 in last year's fantasy defenses. They were both reliable in two ways. They were reliable when, you know, in favorable streaming situations, and they were also reliable, you know, in situations where, you know, you should have benched them or you, you know, probably, you know, thought about benching them. So those were the two, you know, kind of specific takeaways from, you know, my research.
Kev, actually I have a question. As far as evaluating defenses, do you look strictly at numbers or do you look at matchups like maybe a dominant defensive line against a weak offensive line or, you know, a team that's really strong running the ball but can't really pass the ball against a strong run defense? Do you look at matchups like that or just strictly numbers and where defenses are ranked against where offenses are ranked?
I think I definitely do that on in my personal, you know, fantasy activity, but, you know, basically this was, you know, more or less an exercise in just evaluating it, you know, based on the points they were producing and, you know, the context of, you know, trying to evaluate whether or not they were successful in streamable situations. So I didn't actually, you know, get into that. I imagine, you know, I will as the season, you know, begins, but, yeah, I didn't necessarily get into that, especially because, you know, of the, you know, great deal of turnover. I don't know necessarily how applicable it would be to projecting defenses this year.
All right, Kev, I really appreciate you coming on. I think this is the question that we've all been waiting for because I know you change from year to year. Who's your favorite football team this year? Come on, let's be honest. let's say before the season starts, so you don't pick the Super Bowl favorite going into the first week of February.
Growing up, I used to be a 49ers fan. Then I kind of gave up on them and became a Ravens fan.
Shocking to listeners. Shocking.
I mean, this came before their first Super Bowl victory. So, we're kind of going a little way back. But over the past few years, I've kind of given up on rooting for a favorite team just because, to get over the conflict of having to root against Ray Rice, and Joe Flacco.
Right. It's hard. It's hard to root for a specific team when you're screaming defenses every week because, God forbid, they go against your favorite team, your self-proclaimed favorite team. So, Kev, I really appreciate you coming on. Not only is he a defensive streaming expert, this guy is the best commissioner you'll ever be of any league you'll ever be a part of. Most organized, and as you could tell just from the research he did in the past couple of days, the guy's unbelievable, dating back to Sim League and on America Online chat rooms.
As a commissioner of my own league, I have zero problem with anointing Kevin as the best commissioner I've ever had the pleasure of doing the league for.
No, absolutely unbelievable. Kev, we appreciate you calling in. We'll definitely have you again sometime. All right, so we've come to that point where the reason everyone's been listening, we have a giveaway. The giveaway of the Matthew Berry Fantasy Book. Right before we get to Con's Picks of the Week, we'll do our best to give away New York Times best-selling book, The Fantasy Life by Matthew Berry. So in order to win, now's the time to start calling in, 760-283-0846. And you'll have to speak with our screener first for a chance to get on the air just to answer our trivia question. All right, the question that you will be answering: Who was the highest scoring fantasy kicker last season in standard scoring leagues? All right. Start
Jason Hansen?
Now. Seven. What's that?
Jason Hansen?
He is active. I'll give you guys a call. It's not Jason Hansen because he is active. Highest scoring fantasy kicker last season in standard scoring leagues.
I was going to make a joke of the kicker, the Detroit kicker before Jason Hansen. I literally can't remember who it is.
Jason
Nick
Hansen.
Lowry?
He's the most successful kicker in the history of the NFL. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't think we were alive when Jason Hansen was.
Enough, guys, enough. Start calling now. 760-283-0846. And now I'm going to turn it over to Kant for his picks of the week.
I love it, baby. And here we are. I'm going to be doing this every week throughout the rest of the regular season and the playoffs, believe it or not. Football, let's just say it's, probably the hardest sport to bet on because of, the unpredictability of it, a handful of plays decide every game, but I'm going to give you five winners right now. We're going to go with one lock of the week. We're going to go with the best of the rest, where I'm going to give you my next three favorite picks. And then I'm going to give you my upset special for the final pick. Let's start off with the lock of the week. There's actually two games that, I absolutely adored this week. I was wrestling with both of them, but when push came to shove, my favorite game of the week is the Rams laying 4.5 to the Arizona Cardinals. This is one of the more intriguing games. They've both improved. They've made the NFC West a very strong division from top to bottom. But there's pretty much one main reason that I love the Rams this week. They're inside the dome, and you got Carson Palmer, who, let's just say, Tate, do you agree? He's probably the least mobile quarterback in the league.
Yes, and I know you're going this, and I think the Rams defense is going to dominate the Cardinals.
Yeah, they most certainly are. They have a weak offensive line. I don't think Rashard Mendenhall is going to run the ball well, and if they get into those third and long situations, Carson Palmer's face is going to be on that turf early and often, and I like the Rams definitely covering the 4.5-point spread. It's going to be a good matchup, but at the end of the day, I like the Rams by, somewhere in the area of 7 to 13 points. So for that main reason, that is my lock of the week. And now we're going to go with the best of the rest. And this was actually my second favorite pick. I'm going to go with the Cleveland Browns over the Miami Dolphins.
you know, the Miami Dolphins come in, they got high expectations. You know, they added Mike Wallace in the offseason. Ryan Tannehill's coming to his second year. But the thing about the Browns is, historically, Cleveland, or as everyone likes to call it, the dog pound, is one of the toughest places to play in, you know, on a yearly basis. No matter how bad the Browns are, Cleveland's always tough to go in and win. You know, the Dolphins, like I said, high expectations coming in. You know, they're expected to possibly contend for a wild card. I think it's safe to say they're the second best team in the AFC East. But, you know, I think they're going to hit a little roadblock to start off the season. Trent Richardson is going to, you know, put it this way, Trent Richardson, he's going to put his stamp on being one of the top five running backs in the league. And it's going to start in week one. I like the Browns to edge the Dolphins. And the other two games that will fill out the best of the rest, I love the Niners laying 5.5 against the Packers. And it's pretty much the same, you know, for the same reason I told you that the Rams are going to cover against the Cardinals. Like T mentioned, I think on last week's show, Brian Bulaga out for the season. If there is one weak thing about the Green Bay Packers, it's their offensive line. And I think it's safe to say the 49ers, they have far and away the best front seven in the league. So, you know, if they get after Aaron Rodgers, you know, I find it very, very difficult for Green Bay Packers to stay within a touchdown, let alone win the game. So, and especially on the road, that's the reason I like the 49ers. And my third favorite game is tonight's game. I like the Broncos laying the lumber against the Baltimore Ravens, 7.5. Trust me, by all means, this is nothing against the Baltimore Ravens. You know, Peyton Manning is going to do this to a lot of teams this year. They just have too many weapons. I'm not going to be surprised if he throws 45 touchdowns this year. The Ravens, they're going to have a lot of trouble covering all three of those receivers. Peyton Manning's going to exploit the mismatches. And, you know, absolutely, the Ravens could score 17 to 20 points, but I see the Broncos scoring 35. So I like the Broncos by double digits. That fills out the best of the rest. And my upset special, who else would it be, my friend? Sunday afternoon at MetLife Stadium, I will be there in the fifth row. Geno Smith will be making his debut. And all right, and not, I'm not going to – and wants me to calm down because I'm getting excited that I need to sleep with the pick.
You started off so enthusiastic, and then
because I don't want it to turn into a homer pick. I want to give, you know,
about
some
to throw his beer through the window. I'm pumped up.
You know, the thing about the Jets is that we, although it's, you know, completely different teams, different quarterbacks, you know, this was the same exact scenario as last year. We were getting, you know, lambasted by the media throughout the whole preseason leading up to the week one regular season saying, oh, they're going to be terrible. They're not going to score a touchdown. And what happened week one? Mark Sanchez, of all people, put up 48 points. Like I said, I understand, you know, different teams, different scenarios, but, you know, Darrell Reeves is playing his first game in literally a year, you know, not to say he's going to, you know, not blanket the one side of the field, but, you know, we could possibly take a shot or two on him and, you know, get to him. The one thing that does concern me is Doug Martin. The Jets defense is, you know, the run defense at least is very spotty, but I think the Jets cornerbacks match up well with the receivers, and the 12th man is going to be the difference. I like the Jets 20-17, and that is my upset pick.
That's a hell of a concern, Doug Martin. I'll be honest. That's really something you have to worry about. I appreciate the picks. If for nothing else, if you guys – and you know what? In week one, I'll be honest, is the hardest week to bet for because we don't know anything about these teams. You're kind of just going based off their last season performance and strictly what they've done in the off season. So, you know, I also love the confidence he's showing towards his own Jets team. But we'll see. You know, I think by the end of the year, by the end of the week, even, confidence is all they'll have. So we actually we sifted through the callers. We do have a prospective winner when it comes to this huge giveaway we have. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Caller, what's your name?
My name is Jeff.
Jeff, I appreciate you calling in, Jeff. Now, we mentioned the question on the air. Jeff, I hope you know the answer. I want to give this away to someone, and I want the same person to enjoy what I went through. I could not put this book down as soon as I bought it. So let's hope you can come through with this as an avid fantasy football fan since you are listening to this show. Jeff, who was the highest scoring fantasy kicker last season in standard scoring league?
Is it Blair Walsh?
Jeff, there you go. That a boy.
Yeah.
Blair Walsh. Blair Walsh is actually the answer. Former rookie kicker Blair Walsh from the Minnesota Vikings. You know, and we didn't expect to. This just goes to show you, we talked about this with kickers and defenses. You never know who's going to come through. No one knew who Blair Walsh was last year. All of a sudden, he finishes as the number one fantasy kicker. And who would have known except for Jeff? Jeff, who's now the winner of the Fantasy Life, the New York Times best-selling book written by Matthew Berry, ESPN senior analyst. Jeff, please, we're going to put you on hold. We're going to get your address so we can send over the book to you, even though I might have an idea of where you might live. Jeff, I appreciate you calling in. Congratulations. So we have a little extra time. I think we have about a few minutes left. I know you're all anxious for the kickoff of the Broncos-Ravens game, but let's get to some email questions real quick. All right, so we see Mike says, what is your strategy for evaluating waivers every week?
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a loaded question. There's a really complicated answer. I would look at, you know, guys that are either, you know, rookies that had a great first week that were highly drafted, or guys that you were on the fence about, you know, when you were drafting, but, you know, you weren't sure about them, and then they have a big first week. And, you know, also I look at, you know, preseason buzz about guys that had a big first week. Guys like, you know, Alfred Morris. You heard all preseason last year who was going to win the Redskins' starting job and who's going to merge in that backfield. And then, you know, Alfred Morris goes ahead and has a huge first week. And, you know, he became a top 10 running back last year, a top 10 running back last year, and, you know, he was a first-round pick this year. And then a guy like Kevin Ogletree last year, who, you know, had two touchdowns against the Giants, and people thought he could be the next big thing, but, the fact remains that he was still the third option in Dallas. So you really have to look at the teams and, you know, what kind of offenses they run and see what they can do.
Yeah, it's tough to judge every single week, especially, you know, a one-week performance is an extremely short sample size. The best advice we can give you is, you know, follow up on the website, follow up on the Facebook page, where we'll be posting articles most likely every Monday night just to see who are the most coveted waiver wire players going into the Tuesday night waiver wire process. All right, so follow up on that. Do your best to keep up with. Like T said, it's more of opportunity than anything. So when you see that Alfred Morris was getting all those touches in week one, you know, you could be fairly optimistic that he's going to be productive at least for another week. There's different the cool thing about waivers. You know, a lot of people are moving over to a FAB budget, which is fantasy free agent acquisition budget.
I did not know that before until you just told me right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. What it does is that, you know, everyone has a fake $100 in order to bid on free agents. So instead of waiver wire where you just get dropped to the 10th or whatever, however many teams in your league, you get dropped to the bottom of the list every time you pick up a free agent. Now you just do a FAB budget where you do a silent auction for every player, which is, you know, a little more strategy involved. And once you spend that money, you obviously don't get it back. So that's, I'm guessing that's too late in order to change your league to that by now, since the season's starting in 15 minutes. But, you know, it's a cool little thing to think about next year if you haven't implemented it yet. So next question we have, last question of the day. How long do you usually wait before cutting bait on a high draft pick who is underperforming? Okay. Depending on it's pretty much the same as the waiver question, depending on how high you took the guy, what position he plays. This is all, you know, this is all dependent. So this makes waivers even more important. So if guys aren't producing, I usually like to wait, anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks is the basic time. You know, if you have a wide receiver one, say you have know, someone like Randall Cobb. I would say he's the guy who's drafted the highest based on upside alone. He had a good year last year, but his draft stock rose significantly. So now they get Jordy Nelson back. They have James Jones returning, and JaMychal Finley had a good preseason. So it's very likely that Randall Cobb loses some targets and, you know, doesn't live up to the 10th draft spot as far as wide receivers are concerned, you know, exactly where he went. So it's just, you have to look at different situations. Again, follow up on the website, follow up on the Facebook page. That's the best way to see if these guys are working out for you. You know who you drafted. You guys have been listening. You've been good about it this year. You know what you're talking about when it comes to fantasy. So just keep up with your team. That's the thing. Don't be afraid. Don't have too much of an ego. Don't have too much pride when it comes to, you know, guys you've drafted. Especially a specific example, me with Jaquizz Rodgers, who I've had pretty much every year. Same with Montario Hardesty. I've had as a backup running back every year, and I'm scared to cut these guys just because I think they do have the upside and they're going to pan out eventually. But
what about Ryan Broyles? You don't own him in any leagues this year, right?
I mean, I love Ryan Broyles this year. I think I didn't talk about it as much as I wanted to because I wanted to get him in. I think I have him on all 10 of my teams this season.
That's actually really impressive.
Right? It's actually pretty cool. And I reached for him in maybe one of the leagues.
Just to back up Ant's, you know, answer. I am one of those guys, you know how every once in a while somebody will be like, oh, man, I hate that team I just drafted. You know, I made a couple stupid picks. I am not one of those guys. I have an ego. I think my strength is drafting. I don't think I've ever drafted a team that I don't like. So I have a hard time cutting guys that I've drafted. But the bottom line is you have to be smart about it. You know, if there's more potential on the waiver wire than a guy you drafted in the fourth or fifth rounds, you have to be smart. After all, fantasy football is about fun, but it's also about winning. You know, so if, you know, a guy like Le'Veon Bell comes back and he's not doing much, this guy has never shown anything in the NFL, you know. So don't be afraid to cut him, you know. That's the bottom line. You can't be afraid to make a mistake. If there's more potential on the waiver wire, then it's the right time to do it.
Right, exactly. And, you know, it's a different situation. We talked about me having Ryan Broyles on almost every team. I took him in the ninth round. So if that doesn't work out, you know, that's a good spot where you're not concerned with. You're not too upset over cutting a guy that you drafted in the ninth round. You're not losing too much out of that. But anyway, like I said, follow up on the Facebook page. Follow up on our website, backsportspage.com, the fantasy football section. We'll be posting articles weekly, all the time. Feel free. You know, just everyone, the fantasy season or the real NFL season is starting in less than 20 minutes. So, as I said before, get your lineup set. Best of luck to everybody. We appreciate you listening in. Congratulations to Jeff on winning the New York Times best-selling book. Thank you, Kevin, for calling in and doing all your research. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good night. We take it to the house. Take it to the house. 305. Take it to the house. Well, we got that.